Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, sitting here with someone I've known for a long, long time, artist David Ford, owner of YJ Snack Bar in the Crossroads. Hi, David.
Good morning, Gina. Thanks for inviting me out.
Thanks for being here. You've got a new show at UMKC's Art Gallery that's all about Guatemalan muñeca dolls and your experiences purchasing them on your travels. So let's start at the beginning. What is a muñeca doll?
It's a doll head. I came across a broken off head of a doll with some braided hair in a market in a Mayan village in Guatemala. And it was really messed up looking, right? I mean, it was kind of like Chucky or something scary. And to engage in conversation in this market is traditional. That's how you talk whether you want it or not. And I bought it for $3. It wasn't for sale originally, but she just thought such a joke that I thought it was funny, and then I thought it was good conversation with her.
Why was it there if it was not for sale?
Well, it was an advertising thing. I will braid your hair. You know, these are, they speak a local language. They're not speaking Japanese or English or some of the tourists that you might see coming through this, you know, kind of new contact point in a First Nation marketplace, right? So it was an advertisement of I will braid your hair, tourist.
Interesting. So when you first bought one, what inspired your purchase? Why did you want to have
it? It was creepy looking. It was just this strange thing, right? And I was having a nice day, and I wanted to talk with this person, right? Because that's the basis of a lot of economics is that social dynamic, especially there. There's three different Mayan villages that trade in this market for 2,000 years, and they're doing it in their own way. They're much more elastic than our markets are here, I think.
So you did this partly because you wanted to have a conversation. Do you remember the conversation?
Well, they laughed at me. I was, what does this European want this broken doll head for? It's an advertisement. But it was hilarious because I purchased that and I left the town for a week with some friends and came back and she had another one that was slightly better and slightly more elaborately braided. She still wanted to have an advertisement.
The braiding was better.
The braiding was better. And we laughed again together, talking in my broken Spanish or what. And I said, well, how much is this one? And this one was $5. And the last one was $3. So subsequently, over many trips and many years, I skewed the market in this small village to accentuate the value of this previously non-commodified object.
And what's interesting to me about that, David, is that when you say you skewed the market, you are the market.
Generally, I mean, I think now, I mean, it's Gina, it's funny, but there's you can go into this town now and there are shops that just sell doll heads. And some of the braiding is now 3 foot long and looks like Bo Derek coming out of a Hollywood movie or something. It's a weird because it's an unexpected aesthetic. It's not natural to the environment, but it's one that they've adopted in order to remain viable that way.
So a little bit more about the dolls you're talking about, because I went to the show and it seems they're not all Caucasian dolls, but there are an awful lot of what look like Mattel products.
Oh, for sure. No, they're broken kids toys that traditionally were used to teach little girls how to braid their hair or how to, look pretty for this or that thing. I mean, they're about stereotypes, right? There's a lot of embedded, there's an onion skin of arts embedded in this, and there's certainly a predominance of the Caucasian, idealized, hyper, and the dolls of color were more expensive, or they are now on the street.
Do you think that these dolls came, how do you think that they ended up in what you're describing as a Mayan marketplace in Guatemala?
There were some parents, took the broken kid's doll and wanted to make more money. They have a shop. They're in this marketplace already. So they're just responding to market dynamics.
Interesting. Well, so how did the object relate to your experiences and observations in Guatemala over the years? Because this is a place that you've returned to a lot for a long time.
I have reason to go there several times a year, and I successfully each time, especially in the first few years, I would buy every doll head I could find. And so next time there would be 3 shops that had them, and the next time there would be 5 shops that would have them, and people would think that there's some driving force to have these doll heads, or they're a collectible thing. And now I believe that there are other people, unbeknownst, that are purchasing them down there. I mean, it's non-sustainable with just me.
What were you curious about with this? I mean, for the show, you've been exploring, it seems to me, the ripple you've created in this very specific...
Well, I mean, I'm when I talk about skewing it, the economist, who would prefer to be unnamed, I work with, talked about me having breached economic ethics. And in some ways, that's the point. both the art world being the largest unregulated industry, I mean, other than the black market, and the economics world, which has such dynamic force in our day-to-day conversations, it was a way for me to comment on multiple concerns of mine simultaneously while doing other art projects down there and doing other, you know, programs.
Explain a little bit more what you mean about this breach of ethics. We'll have to lay out exactly what The Economist did for you in a second, but I'm curious about what he perceived as a breach of ethics.
Yeah, by the fifth year I was going down there, I brought down a doctoral candidate from the university to help establish the algorithm, right? And did data entry this into a computer because he knows the right programs.
And you were trying to figure out
value, right? I'm doing an interpretive value and to see how attention can make something more valuable or not. And whether it's valuable outside of just this one valley, whether it's econometrically specific to this place or whether it's in a flow that's transferable into, you know, a white gallery academic hosted university, right?
Yeah. So go on. Sorry, I interrupted
you.
No, I
mean, to me, it's an experiment. As an artist, you know, I think that's an important thing to have questions and to be an artist with a passport and to explore. You know, if you notice something, it's about observation at first. I observed this doll. It was interesting to me, and I began to ask questions. I began to then look into myself and wonder, why am I interested in this doll? Why is the market responding like this? What is the, you know, I do plenty of things where I'm putting up paintings and shows, but this is a six-year project, and I have a number of these kinds of things that I do along with my studio practice.
So The Economist sent you to Guatemala eventually with a worksheet for gathering data.
Yeah, several trips later then I came down with a rubric where I began to assess information, asking questions as to what is their language, what's the original price, are you the middleman, do you do this full time, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we've established enough data points to qualify for a true survey and enough rubrics to analyze its emotional or economic impact.
So what other kind of documentation did you do on your recent trips over this period?
There's a lot of mistakes, right? anytime you're doing experimental things, there's going to be mistakes. You know, a strange photo or an odd... I'm working on several other art projects, so I try to include some documentation of other things I would be doing that day. So you get a feeling of in the show, there are photos in situ, there are... examples of the rubrics, there are pie charts, there are blown-up algorithms on the wall, there's bar, you know, bell curves. To me, it's fascinating. It's a close reflection to how my brain explored the questions when I encountered this project to start with.
One of the questions you said you were asking when you started the project is, why am I interested in these dolls?
Exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, as a painter, I'm interested in the quantum mechanical explanation to my predisposition to painting. I mean, if you are in a state of observation and wanting to take, as art is, material into thought, you know, it's a natural investigation.
Did you come to any answers, or are you still in questioning?
Well, I do. In fact, on the coffee cups that have just come in from China, which are beautiful, with the doll heads on them, they come in these styrofoam boxes with at least five different barcodes attached to the outside, both in the design assignment barcode and the shipping barcode and the FedEx and then the university check-in barcode, and they all have to be scanned with this. So ultimately, these braided doll heads now exist at an art museum or art gallery price, and they have an assigned value that's digital and is scannable. And, you know, their value is not necessarily in looking at them as they're a pretty object. It's the concept of the exploration.
So it's partly also a question about value and what we mean by the word value, that there are different interpretations of that word.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you know, it's a conceptual thing. You can easily, you don't want to poke the stick at the economic bear, or poke the stick at the art world bear, but
it's sleeping, leave
it
alone.
Yeah, right. You know, so there's, it's an interesting show. I'm very proud that the university asked me to do it, and it's been fun.
One of the questions in The Economist's notes, which you put the notes on display in the gallery, is about value and is about how every transaction, every monetary transaction tells a story. Have you teased out in your own mind what the story you're telling is?
Well, the origin for me was very humanist. I wanted to engage these people. This is what they're doing. I'm in their village. I want to, you know, have a conversation. And then to have, especially through the rubric, establish whether, is this your preferred form of economics, right? Is this, how long have you done this? Is this multi-generational? You know, I know, you know, in our own small economics at YJ Snack Bar, I know several families where I'm dealing with them multi-generationally, whether it's my Italian provider or Casey Wood down in the West Bottoms, or, I mean, these are real, that's the value system in these other cultures, and I don't want to come in with a Eurocentric art value.
So one of the things you evaluated in each transaction, according to the rubric, was the difficulty level of the transaction itself.
Oh, for sure. Some of them you can't even buy. You can't even get anymore. I mean, the starting price on the street now is $45 in the small village, $3 on the original braided doll head. Yeah.
So I noticed that in one of the transactions, you wrote that it was easy and explained that the salesperson recognized you, approached you, and hugged you. Can you talk about your relationship with the place and with the people?
I have a long relationship in a lot of these towns, and this particular vendor have known for a number of years, and she recognized me, and it was just wonderful, right? You know, I brought her back down photos. I'm sure I'll bring her down a coffee mug the next time I go, because she'll get a joke out of it, right? She'll understand it in an arts conversation as much as sometimes the gallery world will hear when I engage in a conceptual investigation like that.
What is the gallery piece of it? Because you referred to the art world or the art collecting world as one of the largest unregulated markets out there. What are you talking about when you say that?
Well, it's a assigned value. It's a choice of value. And it's huge money-wise, and it is unregulated. I mean, I'm a participant in the art world. Love it, but I come from a different place. I'm not, you know, to show in a university for me is exciting because I never went to a university. You know, I walk around without a cell phone. But the art world at its best, I prefer, here it is, I got it, because today's St. Joseph's Day and the Mardi Gras Indians are out. I prefer art that comes from culture more than the culture that comes from art.
Wow, that's an interesting observation. And the art commerce is part of which?
Well, it's just I'm just paying attention to what my own questions are.
Yeah. Well, David, stay with me through a quick break, okay? We'll hear more about the relationship between David Ford's art and his trips to Guatemala in just a minute. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is Central Standard. Hello, David Ford.
Hello, Gina. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, too. I'm Gina Kaufman, and David is here on Central Standard to talk about his art show, the Muñeca Project, at UMKC's Art Gallery. Muñecas are doll heads that sit outside hair braiding places in the Guatemalan towns David visits, and the show explores how his purchasing and perhaps other people's purchasing and collecting these doll heads has affected their price. David, something that interests me about this show is that it taps into the tension, I think, of traveling abroad. That is, we want to experience this other place, which is tourism, but we don't want to have a tourist experience. And there's also this idea of preserving this place or not changing it by visiting. Do you think that tension is in here too?
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's a comment on it. I've had a number of people come to me with post-colonial questions and, you know, Flaubert or Rousseau's idea of the noble savage and this. And it's like, no, literally this market has existed for several thousand years.
So I mean, when you say people are coming to you with those concerns, are they suggesting that maybe your travels are playing into those ideas?
Well, no, I invite the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And I've worked with, you know, all kinds of institutions and I'm excited when I can engage with someone because I think that's the point of it in some ways. Mostly what it is whether it's an anthropologist, right, or an economist, or a shaman, or, you know, someone from there or here, there's a reason to have the conversation.
So when did you start going to Guatemala?
In 1982.
What brought you there?
The Civil War.
Most people do not journey toward a Civil War,
no,
David.
In 1982, I started going to Latin America when the peso devalued real heavily, and I just thought that was a great time to go, right? I was, you know, a young man. And at that point, there was I was very much involved in First Nation activities, and I wanted to be more responsible in that. So Amnesty International had a bear witness program where you would go into places and you just hang out. You really haven't, you know, you're not trying to do anything other than to bear witness because they won't mess with people if you're in a town, if there is a tourist there. And that brings it back to that other question, right? there's a way to do it right and there's a way to do it wrong. And
what are the First Nation activities you're talking about?
I was involved in hosting members of the American Indian Movement when I had the Left Bank Gallery. I was present at Oka in Canada during the conflict there in the 80s. Chiapas, I was asked to leave the country of Mexico for a few years based on my relationship with the Zapatista movement. I really try to focus my questions and my answers now on the canvas or on the pillow, right? Try to not do as much drama in the street because that endangers my passport and it endangers the ability to bear witness.
So this Amnesty International program, can you tell me more about that? I think
I'm not sure if it still exists. I believe Steve Collins from over at the Next Space on 18th Street or Dave Anderson are both really good contacts for Amnesty International, and they're a wonderful, wonderful organization.
But what is the idea of bearing witness?
Well, at that point, they were killing a lot of Indians in these villages, and they weren't doing it where there were other people around. You only do that stuff in the dark.
And so by bearing witness, it creates safety.
One of their major campaigns at that point around the world was small notes they would send to political prisoners that just said in five languages, "You are not alone."
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I've traveled with you to Chiapas, and going from village to village with you, I noticed that people would just appear who recognized you, and that you do have real relationships with the places you visit.
Yeah, I speak in Chiapas in Mexico. I kept a home for a while, and I speak a certain amount of a local dialect, and had a deeper level of relationship with a museum that collects my work. And you know, oftentimes, you know, my work goes out of the town or out of the country instead of in town. This is my first show at UMKC that I've had in Kansas City in a couple of years. And so I'm excited about it. I've been pleased with how they've served.
What do you think is the conversation in Kansas City? I mean, how has the conversation been playing out so far? It's such a conceptual show.
Well, it's real small, right? I mean, my ghetto credibility is intact. I think there was 30 of, you know, my dearest friends at the opening, because it's hard to find, right? I mean, if you want to go to this, they're closed for spring break next week. It's a university setting. You can go Monday morning at like 8:30 in the morning to a gallery, though. You know, so you're really, I'm trying to engage in a conversation with different people than just the gallerists that I have generally worked with.
How have the trips that you've taken and the things you've brought back, not just objects like these doll heads, but also ideas and even rituals, how have those become a part of your community here in Kansas City?
Well, I have a number of ongoing projects that relate back and forth between Central America and here, including Maximone that was just featured at Prospect 3 in New Orleans, the Your Fear project that's traveled well. I also, you know, I buy antiques and I resell them, or I, you know, draw buildings and learn how to watercolor landscapes, right? I mean, it's an integral part of my persona. I mean, at the snack bar, you'll have food that we learn to cook there.
And do you think there's a line between the kinds of experiences that you're talking about in other countries and your art, or are they one and the same?
Yeah, I mean, it's I really don't set out to make any certain thing, right? You wake up in the day and you're going to be influenced by something, and sometimes that starts as a drawing that becomes a sculpture, becomes a performance, and sometimes you take a performance and distill it down into a painting or a drawing, right?
And sometimes you make bacon.
I make bacon every day.
That's all the time we have for today's show. David Ford, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you much, Gina.
If David's project interests you, there's a panel discussion at the UMKC Gallery on Wednesday, April 1st. It's led by the economist David Enlisted, and it will explore econometrics, classical political economy, and post-colonial theory. That's April 1st at 3 p.m. You can listen back to today's show or sign up for a podcast at kcur.org/centralstandard. I really recommend the podcast. That way you'll never miss an episode. Stay in touch with us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Tomorrow, it's a food show. Is Kansas City meat creative? That's the question. If you're an adventurous carnivore, tell us where you get the best stuff. But first, tonight at the library, we're hosting a lively discussion about the future of the West Bottoms. Go to kcur.org for the information. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's it for today. Stick around for Up to Date next.